You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Folks, Mother's Day is around the corner, and let me talk to you about 1-800-Flowers. I can't wait. Every year, it's a tradition. I send stuff to my mother, my mother-in-law, and my wife because they are three amazing moms. They're better than all your moms out there. You think you have good moms? No, I have good moms in my life. I'm just kidding. This was a little harsh. I'm sure you guys all have good moms too. From your mom to the mother of your children and all the moms in between, this Mother's Day, give back to the ones that have given you everything. 1-800-Flowers helps you celebrate all amazing moms, from homemade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts, ordered easily and delivered fresh. For a limited time, you can save up to 40% off Mother's Day bestsellers at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan. Don't wait. Order today and save up to 40% at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the Big Suey, presented by DraftKings.
Why are you listening to this show?
The podcast that seems very similar to the other Dan Le Batard podcast.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to apologize for that.
In fact, the only difference seems to be this imaging.
I have been tempted in restaurants just walking past tables to grab somebody's fries that if they're just there. That hasn't happened to you guys?
I've done it.
And now, here's the marching man to nowhere, Fat Face, and the habitual liar.
Welcome to Meadowlark is 45. I am Howard Bryant, and we have a quorum, as usual. We got Kate Fagan and Amin El Hassan. I am not where I usually am, which is at my house. You can see by the background, I'm at the U.S. Open. And we, of course, have news here. The big news is Serena Williams playing her last match last week, eliminated by Ayla Tomljanovic, and in a stunning three-set match. This was the end. She had announced on August 9th that she was going to retire after the Open. She played two matches, got to the third round. And it was a really interesting farewell. And being on the grounds here, I'm really glad that I was here. This is my first sporting event since 2 years ago. And this was sort of an interesting one, Kate, to come to, because there's so much discussion about Serena. Serena is obviously the middle of, and at the center of so many different movements over the past 25 years. It's amazing that she turned pro 27 years ago. But the last couple of years, as we've talked about the end of her career, there's been so much discussion about this phrase that has always sort of grated on me, which is passing the torch. And when you think about that, even just as language goes, torches don't get passed in sports. Usually what ends up happening, and we've talked about this before, there are usually three ways. To me, there are only three ways to retire. The game retires issue, where you go out there and you realize you can't play anymore, or your team releases you. But but you cannot do this anymore. You're not good enough to play. Door number two is that your body retires you. Your Terry Bradshaw and your elbow goes, or you're Joe Montana and you're laying in the end zone with a concussion and your body tells you that this is it. And then, of course, there's door number three. And door number three is you go out on top. You're Peyton Manning, you win the Super Bowl, and you walk away. Very few athletes take door number three. And yet in sports, we try to send the message that that there's some ceremony here. Usually the ceremony is you go out and you get whooped. You go out, you get beat, and that's it. It's a merciless process. And going into this tournament, there was a great fear amongst a lot of her fans that they didn't want to witness this. We already saw it. She'd only played four matches coming in. She had lost to Harmony Tan, the world number 115 at Wimbledon, a place where Serena had won seven Wimbledons. And so this was the sad goodbye. And a lot of people were nervous about what that was going to mean, what it was going to look like Muhammad Ali getting slaughtered by Trevor Burbick at the end and Larry Holmes before Larry that. Holmes, yeah. And so I wanted to just bring this out to the group about the sad ending or about retirement. And when we think about the end, obviously Kobe Bryant gets to put, a stamp on it and people want to remember it this way, but we don't get to choose the end. The end is usually very sad. That's why they call it the end.
Since we briefly talked to Serena at the top of last week, I've been spending the whole week in between just thinking about sports retirements. And the different, we touched last week a little bit on the pre-announcement retirement tour versus the in the off season just sort of drifting off into the night and the differences between them. Howard, to your point,
I was also thinking about just you were limiting a little bit the three doors, and that's mm-hmm. Here we're thinking like the professionals. Here are your options, but I think it's also interesting. We don't have to go here right away, but just at the top to think too about.
In our sports world, going back to even just engaging in it as a kid through all the different levels, sports is really like the only endeavor where you really have to quit it along the way. Other things you sort of just leave or you stop doing, or there isn't a whole lot of culture and community built around it where you have to quit and stop and all of the language we use around sports. And I think that does impact how we talk about our athletes when they've reached the very top. We can't help but project onto them that idea of like, oh, you quit basketball your junior year of high school. We have to know in sports that you have taken it to the very end. We can't leave anything on the table. We sometimes want our athletes like Michael Jordan to walk away after he hits the perfect pull-up jumper. But most of the time we want to thread the needle so perfectly on our athletic like heroes that they have not taken one step too many, but they have not taken one step too few either. Mm-hmm. And I think we can talk about other athletes and what that means, but also Howard, just to kick it right back to you, where do you think Serena landed on that? Did she take too many steps?
No, I've actually changed my mind on this. There was a time when I believed in the poetry. I used to believe in poetry. Now I don't believe in poetry. it's not that. It is more that when you decide when the tank is empty, we have to remember that these people are still very, very young people as adults. And when I say I believed in the poetry, what I'm saying is that I used to think, oh, no, OK, Jordan beating Utah, end it right there. That's the poetry. We don't want to see the sad ending. This is the way it's supposed to be. However, if you want to play, play. And if you want to go, just keep like my favorite player growing up was Robert Parrish. And Chief played way longer than he needed to. He was done, I think he retired in 97, and he had mm-hmm. been done for the previous 4 or 5 years. But he still wanted to play basketball. And if that's what you want to do, then you do it. In Serena's case, what I found fascinating about this was Monday night at the Open, I think people were expecting the funeral. She really did not play very well against Emma Raducanu in Cincinnati. And Raducanu served can't break an egg. And here's Serena, the greatest returner of all time. She couldn't get the ball back. She couldn't do anything. And so it was like, if you can't return her serve, what's going to happen when we get to a major? And so I think people were really expecting that Monday night to be the end. And it wasn't. She was great. She had gone out and she had really, really trained hard. She was moving. She was turning back the clock. She was playing the 80th ranked player. She was playing Danka Kovanich, but the rankings don't really matter. What matters is what you're doing on the court. And she gave people a little bit of magic. She gave them something to hold on to. And she gets to the second round. And so Wednesday night, she's playing Annette Contivate, who's a number two player in the world. And everyone's expecting her to get smoked there because they see that number two next to Contivate, even though Contivate's not really playing that well. Contivate also had long COVID, so she's had a really hard year. She doesn't have the stamina. And Serena turned back the clock again, and she played great. She had 11 aces, and the crowd was going crazy, and it was a really sort of magical thing. And now you're starting to think kind of big. You're like, you know what? Maybe there's some Jimmy Connors 91 here. Maybe there's a last stand here. And in that brilliance, you could see how much people were gravitating toward this moment. It wasn't just the CNBC piece of it, although it did make me laugh that the only person on Ash the entire week during Serena's matches that got booed when they put him on the celebrity big board was Ben Simmons. That did make me laugh. And so then we get to Friday, and she's playing Ayla Tomljanovic, and she's playing great. She's serving for the set 5-3 and then loses four straight games. Then she's up 4-0. She's up 4-0 and 5-2, serving for the set again. Gets broken. Suddenly we're in a tiebreak. And then she turns back the clock, and she gives us a little bit more. And there was a wonderful game at 2-5 in the second set that lasted 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And she was just fighting and fighting. And the crowd was going crazy because this is how we want, you know, as they say in the Westerns, she was going to die with her boots on, right? She wasn't going out. She was not going out quietly. And then we get to the third set, and you're looking at the clock, and I'm looking at this, and I'm going, we're hitting 2.5 hours. This is going to be a 3-hour match. How much more does a 40-year-old have? Serena's going to be 41 on September 26th. Ayla Tomljanovic is 29 years old. And by the time we got to that third set, Serena broke to start the third. And I'm like, woo, here we go. And then she loses the next six games and her career is over. But that last game when she was trailing 5-1 was a 22-point game, and it lasted 14 minutes. And it was brilliant. It was great theater. It was, I'm not going out, like, you know, she lost 6-1. She ended her career losing the final six games of her career. But this was what you wanted from an athlete to go out.
The interesting thing, first of all, I didn't know this until like maybe 2.5 hours into the 3-hour match that was the Tomljanovic match, which was she was playing doubles on the off days.
She played one match. She played doubles Thursday night and with Venus and got beat. And there were a lot of people who were saying, why did you do this? You don't have enough.
That was my first question.
Mm-hmm. And did it so turn out in that late second, early third set that playing doubles the night before sapped a little bit of reserve that she might have needed to come through that match? We'll never know. What we did know, however, was that for fan service, we also got to see Venus and Serena on the court again, right, one more time as well. Venus and Serena, people say, oh, Serena's got 23 majors. No, she doesn't. Serena's got 39 majors.
Right.
Serena's got 14 more majors with Venus. And by the way, they were 14-0 in major finals. And she won two more mixed doubles majors as well. So for the fan service and for her personally and for them as a family to be out there at the U.S. Open, which is the American, you know, the home slam, that was big. But when you're watching that third set, you could hear people moaning and groaning, going, why did she play doubles yesterday?
Because you know what it is, Howard, is watching her unforced errors, making what were routine plays for her messing up. I didn't get the feeling she was overpowered or outmatched. She kept making mistakes that she doesn't typically make. And it's hard not to wonder, man, if she was fresh and fully rested,
maybe some of those shots stay in. Maybe I remember. Yeah, I remember when I was covering the Yankees, and we are sitting there talking to Joe Torre, and Mariano Rivera was always so good. And somebody asked Joe, can you imagine Rivera at the end, unable to get guys out, just get knocked around the yard? And Joe was like, no. Can't. I shudder to think what that's going to look like. I don't see that happening. And it's really interesting because when you're looking at Serena or you're looking at the rest of these players, these great players, suddenly guys were getting hits off Rivera that never got hits off them. That's what 40 looks like. This is what it looks like.
Yeah. There's an interesting psychology, though, like and for ease of discussion, we'll just call it like the seen and the unseen costs, where maybe like you take Mariano, Mariano Rivera, sorry. You take him as an example. Like, if he gets blasted at the end of his career, we feel like then it's like the, it's what we can see of the impact of an aging athlete.
Yeah.
Like, oh, and this is so sad. And like someone at such heights now is just a regular
humble,
mortal
yeah.
like us.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's like there can be, unless you have like Schadenfreude, like a pain to that if you are a fan of that athlete. But then the unseen costs are the athletes who go out before they get, you know, hit in the ninth inning. Mm-hmm. And you don't see them at home, maybe pained that they left too early. Like there's a separate story that unfolds away from the court and the diamond that we never see.
Well, that's right. Isn't that part of the ritual, though? Like, for example, we are champions, right? We come to watch champions. Mm-hmm. And the only way to remove a champion is to beat their ass, mm-hmm. right? This is part of the ritual. This is part of the natural order of things. In men's tennis right now, people are saying the same thing. Nadal is 36, Djokovic is 35. When are the young guys going to come and knock these guys off the perch? Mm-hmm. They're going to stay forever unless somebody knocks them off of the perch. And as we saw on the men's side, Francis Tiafoe comes out and he obliterates Nadal. And nobody could see that. I actually saw it coming in a certain way simply because Nadal didn't really play that well. But you also think that, okay, this is what 36 looks like. And, mm-hmm. and you know, when you talk to, I remember talking to Hank Aaron about this, and he said that the professional athlete always believes that all they have to do is make an adjustment. They don't believe that failure is a part of their life because they've always been able to make an adjustment to keep going, especially at the top, top levels. And so when I think about ritual, obviously it is the most extreme in boxing. Boxing is where you see the ritual. The other guy beats your ass and you need to walk away, right? Boxing is the most visceral of it. Tennis is a close second where there's another guy on the other side, another player on the other side of the net, and they send you into retirement. There are times in other sports where you can see it too, where it's like, okay, you can't do this anymore.
It's funny, earlier you brought up Peyton Manning as an example of someone leaving on top, and technically, yes, he won a Super Bowl and retired.
Yeah, he couldn't play anymore either.
That season, mm-hmm. like, you could tell, like, and again, much like Serena making unforced errors, you could tell, like, Peyton Manning missing the target, Peyton Manning yeah. being behind on the throw, Peyton Manning not, these are things that we did not associate with him. And yet here we are. And like you said, this is 40 or 37 or 38. The slippage, sometimes we don't allow ourselves to believe that the slippage is happening. We make excuses. And the reality is the athletes are making excuses too. Oh, I just that. I'll get them next time.
Well, Kate, I was going to say to you, I mean, keep going if you got something. I was going to say, Kate, we saw this last night with Sue Bird. Last night was the end. And it was so funny watching her because she was so poised, but you could see that there was some level of emotion there as well, because they're still playing. They just got eliminated as well. And so it was like there's this jumble of emotions, and only they know specifically when it's time. I don't want to do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. But having Sue Bird go out the week following Serena, it does feel demarcating, doesn't it?
Yeah. And I think if you look at even the quartet of female athletes who have retired just in the last few weeks, like Allyson Felix, Sylvia Fowles as well in the mm-hmm. WNBA, Sue Bird, Serena, later on, I think we can get to, you know, this, the concept of like Sue Bird coming into the league in 2003, and it had just launched 6 years before. It had launched yeah. when she was a senior in high school. So it was mm-hmm. like, no one had a career. Like, there was nothing to say.
There was no start to finish.
Just end up like so and so. I mean, there was nothing of that. Like, this idea of passing the torch when it came to professional women's basketball is like, there, we were building a torch. We didn't even, you know, we didn't even know what it could look like. And something similar exists with Serena because of what she did within women's tennis. Like, they're, the model she introduced, if it's even replicable, not, but was something we'd never seen before. But I think what I was thinking about when, to go back to your question specifically about Sue, one, it's just, if you paid attention to game 3, when she hit that 3-pointer with 0.8 seconds left, and it looks like you are headed for a different trajectory. You can't help but be a fan of an athlete and think they just hit a game-winning shot to put their team up 2-1 in a best of five. So their probabilities of winning the series are now, Amin, what do you think, 75% if they go up 2-1?
Yeah.
And then you're like, you're in the WNBA finals in your final year. Like, we have set the table.
It's preordained right now. It's happening.
Exactly. And in 0.8 of a second, overtime, they get destroyed in overtime. They lose game four. It's like how quickly that slope down to the end becomes. Like, you think you're in your retirement
Arena.
Year. Yeah, exactly.
Bye-bye.
You think, I could
bye-bye
keep this
poetry.
Going. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, 36 hours later, you are in your post-game press conference. And it just got me what I was thinking about. Sorry, Amin, and I'll let you go in a second. When it came to Sue and to all of this, is like, there's got to be something inside of every athlete, but here we're talking about Sue Bird and Serena Williams, where you've announced your retirement, but there's got to be some contingency in your mind where you believe you're going out with the US Open, you're going out with the WNBA title. And when that does not happen, like you said last week, maybe announcing it prior makes it harder for you to go back on that. But there's got to be something where you're like, this is not the way it was supposed to go. I should come around for another run at this, because this is, it was so close. I could do this again.
Yeah. And at the same time, there has to be a feeling of, good God, I can't be Sisyphus. I can't go all the way back to the bottom of the mountain and start rolling this boulder up. And
I
you
can't
talked
do
about
pre-training camp. I can't do. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
You talked about the seen and the unseen, Kate. Yep. The unseen is, I don't feel like waking up at 5 a.m. to start working out. I don't feel like showing up to the training table at 7 a.m. so that I can be ready by 8:30 practice, because it takes an hour and a half of adjustments and all this stuff. I don't feel like sitting in an ice tub afterward. I don't feel like watching film. I don't feel like, you know, watching what I eat, which is a big thing, obviously, for athletes. They have strict diets and all that stuff. I don't feel like doing any of that stuff. As I said last week, a lot of athletes say, I don't miss playing. I miss all the shit it took me to get ready to play, and I miss all the shit it took for me to decompress and recover after playing. I used to work with Mark West, and I remember when, like,
Old Dominion Mark West?
Old ODU Mark West, yep. And so when centers were starting to get bigger and bigger deals, I said to Mark, you ain't got 15 minutes in you there to go out there and cash one more check? He said, I'll give you 15 minutes. It'll take me 3 weeks before I can give you another 15 minutes, though, because, you know, I'll be laid out. And that's ultimately that, which sounds like a physical impediment, but really it's a mental impediment. It's like, I just don't feel like doing any of it anymore. So while you're on that Cinderella run, of course, that's where you're in the zone and all those things are working. You're like, I have this. I have the ability to make the right reads and make the right plays, and one thing leads to another, and here we are in a WNBA Finals or US Open Final or a Super Bowl or whatever. And like I said, like Peyton Manning, you look at that season, he was awful. He was awful. Even in that Super Bowl, he was nondescript.
No, that was Von Miller's Super Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah,
but and you know what, though? But this is what happens. It goes back to what we talked about last week when David Ortiz said, my f***ing feet hurt. Right. I don't want to prepare anymore. I don't want to do this. And you get the euphoria of making this run, and you do want to have this. And when I was thinking about Serena, part of the Serena question to me was, we all want, especially them, these athletes who have been the masters of their universe and who have been able to bend everything to their will for all of these years, to write your own story. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing it with Roger Federer, wants to come back. He's 41 years old, wants to make a run. We've seen it with so many athletes who think that they can write this script for them. And I think in Serena's case, I don't think anyone was even talking about the final. We started to creep toward it when she had a chance. And one of the most famous moments, maybe the most famous moment at the U.S. Open, didn't even end with a victory. It was Jimmy Connors making a run to the semifinals. Mm-hmm. And so he got to the semifinal, and Jim Courier destroyed him. And that was it. But it was the journey itself that made it such a magical thing that everyone's talking about. How is this guy doing it? And maybe there was a chance that we're going to be able to see something magical. For me, when I think about this sort of phenomenon, I do believe in ritual. And I do believe that the Cinderella piece of it is nostalgic and it's fun and it's sort of interesting to think big. And obviously, when you're looking at someone like a Tom Brady, who's been able to play as long as he's played, these thoughts begin to diminish a bit because maybe, and Serena was saying it, well, if Tom Brady can do it, maybe I can keep playing. You know when it's time. And you can't play forever. And I think that so many players, because they do really believe in this narrative that they are in control of everything, have a very, very difficult time. And that's why the ritual is so important, that somebody has to come over and knock you the f- out. Then you know it's over, right? It's done.
Yeah, that's the chain of, not the chain of command, chain of succession. Chain of succession dictates.
The natural order.
Yeah, if you're a Star Wars fan, you know that the Mandalorians have the Darksaber, and the only way you can win the Darksaber, which allows you to rule over them, is by combat. I can't hand it to you.
it's the movie poster for Godfather 3. I can't believe I'm actually going to quote The Godfather Part 3. Nobody wants to talk about that movie, but the movie poster was great. Real power cannot be given, it must be taken.
Yes.
Now, the rest of the movie was a disaster.
In retrospect, it wasn't that bad. It just wasn't.
Oh, it was not a great movie.
No.
16 years later, absolutely.
Let Francis Ford Coppola make the movie he wants to make. No,
I agree.
It's funny because, like, I remember when Godfather 3 came out, everyone said how horrible it was. And then I remember watching it a few years ago, and it's not the Godfather of the Godfather 2.
No, it's not.
But it's not a bad movie. It's just not.
No. It had two things wrong with it. Number one, Sofia Coppola was horrible. It's the worst death scene ever. Dad, she's got a bullet going right through her in a white dress. Dad, right? Jesus, that was awful. But then again, Winona Ryder had Lyme disease, and what could you do, right? Yeah. Coppola had to do something. The second problem with that movie was that you know you've got a problem when the subplot is better than the plot. The whole Vatican immobiliare oil thing was so convoluted. Yeah. I had no idea what was happening. But the subplot of Michael Corleone coming to grips with the fact that he has become a monster, and that he did destroy his family, and that everything that he tried to do to succeed his father has essentially failed. That was brilliant. And I thought Pacino was very, very good in that movie, and Andy Garcia was electric. There are things in there. I mean, there's still, Coppola is still the master, but it was still Godfather 3, and it will suffer as it has deserved to suffer 16 years after 2.
I still haven't seen it, so I'm just nodding along to this.
Have you seen any
of the three?
Come on.
I have brought good Godfather insights to this podcast previously.
That's right.
But it does not extend to Godfather 3 yet.
And nor should, you know what? You'll be okay if you don't. If you wait 16 years to see it as Coppola waited 16 years before 2 and 3, I think you'll be fine, Kate.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I want to throw one other thing out on this Serena question as well. And that is fan service. I never thought she was going to quit. I thought she was going to fade away. She, you know, says she doesn't like goodbyes. She said she didn't want to do that. I thought she was just going to either play or not play. And then one day she just stopped playing. And then when the Vogue announcement came, tickets went through the roof at the U.S. Open because now they knew this was it. Her fans, the number of Serena fans who had come to me and said, I'm really glad that she did this so we get a chance to see her. I thought that was actually really cool. I thought there was something valuable in that where you do want to see these players. And I remember thinking about this. I never saw Larry Bird play. Grew up in Boston, but the Garden was sold out every single, never got to see Bird play. And the two times I got to see the Celtics on the road, once when I was in college, when they played the 76ers, and the other when I was in California and they played the Warriors, Bird wasn't in the lineup. So I never got a chance to see him. And so I thought there was something to that from a fan service standpoint. Then I heard something relatively cynical. And once again, as we talked about this last week, it all depends on how cynical you are, that some of this announcement has also been a springboard for Serena to launch her second act, Serena Ventures. And in every interview she does, she mentions Serena Ventures. And you start to see the business and the branding of all of this. And I don't want to be that cynical. I'm going to hold on to the fact that she did the world a solid to go see her those last three matches.
Well, I have a question for Howard. What we see a lot from athletes, particularly elite athletes, the reason why letting go is hard is because they do enjoy this thing. And perhaps more importantly, this is all they've known for a very long time. When you started the show, you said Serena's been a pro for 27 years. And that's not counting the formative years that came before that.
Now, all of a sudden, she was 3 years old. She'd been playing tennis for 37 years.
Literally since before she can remember at some point. So now she hangs up a racket and does Serena Ventures, and we're expecting her to be fulfilled. Is that the kind of personality she has? Or she can walk away from this thing that's been her life literally and just do something completely different?
Well, and that depends on how empty the tank is and who you are. I mean, this is as the great Roger Angel has always said, that this, may he rest in peace, that this is the price of their golden youth. I don't think Derek Jeter is happy right now. I'm pretty sure Larry Bird's not happy right now. I know Michael Jordan is completely unfulfilled. What on earth can duplicate that? What can replace that? You know, you're Sue Bird. You hit a three-pointer with 0.8 seconds left. What is going to replace that? You win two titles in college. You win four titles as a pro. You win five gold medals. How many people have that kind of a second act in anything? And so, and for them, it really does go back to the all-time famous interview, the exchange between Joe DiMaggio and Marilyn Monroe, when she goes out to the USO and the troops are going wild for the great Marilyn Monroe. And she comes back to Joe DiMaggio and she says, Joe, you never heard such cheers. And Joe said, yes, I have.
Well, I think it's also part of we've touched on this in previous Meadowlarkers, this like insatiable appetite that we have in our culture, that everything has to be empire. Everything has to be expanded to the reaches of coast to coast. And here we've put on the table that Serena's goal must be to top her tennis career, right? Or not that mean that you're saying that, but like our goal is like, well, act two of Serena Williams, she can't be fulfilled unless she is like excelling in some way that we as a culture have deemed like makes sense to us. Like,
well, and they
she has
buy
award-winning
into that
films.
Too.
Yeah, this is not like an our issue. It's more of a, we can't even understand if we checked in with Serena 5 years from now and she didn't have like an award-winning doc.
Well, and Kobe winning the Oscar, yeah. Isn't that right to that point, Kate, where yes. Kobe wins the Oscar for Dear Basketball? Everyone's like, he's great at this too.
Yes. It sets a new standard for what we were supposed to expect from our athletes post-career. Like,
well, which is why she's in retirement.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, I look at a lot of those names that we just named, and they've managed to stay connected to the game because, like Howard said, nothing can replace that. But you look for it. So Michael going into management and eventually owning a team. Derek Jeter tried to do the same thing, right? Kobe, through his work on detail, but also throwing himself into helping his daughter achieve her dreams and be the best player that she can be. They all had some way of like, yeah, I'm done, but I'm not. I'm still around. The idea of like, and now I'm doing something completely different. It's one that isn't, even someone like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who we always looked at as a guy who just had so many interests outside of sports and basketball, you know, history and jazz and all this stuff, still was an assistant coach for the Clippers and a consultant. Even the great intellectual Kareem Abdul-Jabbar still has that thing in him where it's like, I crave this part of my life, and I want it to never end. And
well, so
I look at Serena. I'm like, how is that going to manifest in her? Or is she going to be just miraculously? No. I'm tennis. Cool. I'm good on that. Now I'm moving on.
Don't you think they're Howard or Enden mean? I think that a lot of athletes can be torn toward spending the first few years making sure that they plant their feet and establish themselves in ventures that aren't tied to tennis or basketball. And then after a few years, feeling like it's okay again to dip back in and be defined by it. But they first need that separation from it, a lot of the athletes that I know.
Well, it's a pejorative, isn't it? We treat it like a pejorative. Like if you don't have a second act, oh, you're a basketball lifer or whatever. And everybody, once again, the empire idea is that I'm always on top. I can never acknowledge any vulnerabilities or any uncertainties or any doubt, fear, etc. So I gotta act like I know what I'm doing. I have to act as though I'm in control of everything. And then you realize that, well, you know what? This is what I know, and this is what I do, and I actually love doing this, and I want to be part of this. Now, obviously, when you bring the money into it, most of the guys don't go back. They don't need it. They don't need to go back. And when we talk about professional sports especially, do you want to do that much travel? It's actually the lifestyle that guys either love or can't wait to get rid of. Guys go, you know, players go home and go, I don't like being home this much. It's almost like I remember when I was on the beat. You know, you bitched and moaned and complained about being on the beat. And then when the season was over, you're like, oh, thank God. But then somewhere around late December, early January, you're like, it's time. It's time to go. And now I got nowhere to go. And then you come back. It's like, I don't know who I am right now.
That's not to mention the people at home who are like, I miss you. And then when you're around all the time, man, you're irritating.
Exactly.
Well, it's like, I like you in doses.
Exactly. It's like one of my favorite scenes in No Country for Old Men, where Tommy Lee Jones is talking to his wife and he's like, you want to go riding today? And she goes, I have a job. I gotta go to work today. In other words, what are you going to do with yourself?
Right.
Yeah,
they explored that a little bit in Winning Time with Pat Riley, for sure. Him being caught in that no man's land. But the story with Pat Riley was fascinating to me because as a player, he hadn't reached such heights that he had set himself up for only certain jobs would be good enough for him. Like if you're Michael Jordan, like you can't start out as like almost being an NBA coach isn't even good enough. It isn't even prestigious enough. Like, and so there's certain icons that post-career, I feel like they can be limited in what they dabble in because there are certain things that I as a fan would look at and be like, wait, it's Michael Jordan is an assistant coach for the... Yeah.
Like, why is Michael Jordan a regional manager at Hardee's? I want to learn the business, that's why.
Like there's only, like you have set yourself up like lateral moves from where you are very limited.
That's right. I want to throw one thing over to you, Amin, as well, just getting back to Serena. And that is the, you know, I do want to go back to this idea of how important is the ritual? How important is the ritual? And yes, passing the torch does not work. It does not happen this way. You don't. And the reason why passing the torch doesn't work is because you don't get to choose your successor.
Bam. That's exactly it. You don't get to pick who's next in line. They make themselves apparent. 2 years ago, 3 years ago, people would have said Naomi Osaka is the next in line. And now, I don't think anyone would bring that name up as far as a successor. You don't. The reason
now people are talking about Coco Gauff.
Yeah, the reason why it is such a beyond our thirst for blood, our thirst for seeing the gladiator fall in the arena, is because it's the only way to ensure that the right person got it. Because the right person went out and got it, snatched it away from you. And that's where, you know, the ritual has roots in practicality. It's not just, you know, it's not just a ritual. It's just like, it has to be this way. Otherwise you get King Joffrey.
That's right. And doesn't the player need this ritual too, Kate? I am the man. No one's been able to beat me. Why would I leave if nobody can beat me? Don't I also need it to be proven to me that I can't do this anymore, that I'm not where I want to be?
Yeah. When I was thinking about how with Serena, there was not as much poetry, because you wouldn't necessarily say that who she loses to is because that person has beaten her, then they step into some space. Like, there was no poetry in that way. It was like, it was almost random, right, Howard? Is that fair? I mean,
well, what I mean is that the person who beats you in this case, the person who beats you is not the person replacing you. The person who wins the title is the beginning of the new world.
But sometimes things line up where the person who beats, like, for example, it is not lost on me that Sue Bird losing to the Las Vegas Aces is a bit of a passing of the torch for lots of reasons, because the Las Vegas Aces have Becky Hammon as coach, which is this new frontier for the WNBA, where they have produced a star in Becky Hammon, have introduced her storyline to the world, and now she comes back and she is coaching. And the Las Vegas Aces as a franchise feel to me like they represent the future of the WNBA in terms of how they play. Not that their style is different than the Storm, but like the players that they have are different than Sue Bird's style. And it's a rare thing where you get to see somebody with the KO punch who you also feel like represents generationally a shift in your sport.
Well, that is
a rare moment.
Yeah. Well, that is also poetic, because because the Storm would have rather kept winning. Right. I mean, at some point, it's over.
But nature didn't.
Right. I mean, and so it is a very, like I said, it's an interesting piece to consider, because not only do you not get to choose the successor, but to Amin's point earlier, and to your point too, Kate, where the stars do align and this person is here to replace you. We saw that in 2018. When Osaka beat Serena in the US Open final, and it looked like, okay, this is where it was going to go. I hated that, to be perfectly honest, because I thought it was bullshit. I thought it was unfair. One, I thought it was unfair to Naomi Osaka. I'm like, here's somebody with 23 majors. You don't have any. Right? So before we start anointing you, you got a career you gotta go build first. And I mean, I don't want to hear anybody talk about heir to Serena until you gotta get at least the double digits. I mean, so that piece of it, I really sort of fear for the athletes, because our insatiable thirst to say the next, to be next, to have next, it runs counter. Nobody's coming close to 23 majors. I mean, that's it. This is over. 39, yeah. 23 singles, right? I mean, no one's going to do what they did. So this thing, and people were crying when Serena lost last Friday night, people were in the stands crying. And I was trying to like put this into words and make sense of it. And I was realizing that the reasons why they were weeping was because you're not going to see this again. And there is a piece of you that it's not just a piece of her that's leaving. It's a piece of you that's leaving. If you remember her when she came on the scene wearing beads in her hair and braces on her teeth, then you're also thinking back to, gee, I was 26. Mm. And how old am I? So through these athletes, we protect our own time, and seeing them diminish also reminds us that we're diminished, that time has passed.
Yeah. I mean, it is like a kind of death.
See, there's poetry there, right? Yeah. There is poetry in that.
We all had I think a lot of 90s kids had their own emotional reaction to, say, Stuart Scott dying, because mm-hmm. it was about your childhood growing up with all of the calls running on repeat in SportsCenter. And I think, Howard, to your earlier point about announcing retirement when it came to Sue Bird and Serena, especially in women's sports, less so in tennis, definitely in the WNBA, it was necessary for Sue Bird to announce her retirement, despite her not really wanting to, because she represented the first generational cycle in the history of the league.
Yeah.
She was the first one who, like, a 12-year-old could have gone to watch her play. And now that 12-year-old is 31 and is buying her own tickets or taking her own child.
Or competing against her.
Or competing against her. Exactly. Right. And so, and that's that cycle of life that we are, you know, that we love to be privy to.
And that, as they say, is a wrap. Meadowlark is 45. Who, Pedro Martinez is 45. Donovan Mitchell. Did you notice?
Tom Brady is 45.
That's right. That last week on Meadowlark is 44, we received a little bit of social media shade for not just giving a nod out to Hank Aaron on 44. We got Meadowlark is 50 coming up. We got to think about something for that. Meadowlark is 46. Who's the greatest 46 out there?
I don't know. For 44, I thought we were going to say Derek Coleman, but I guess I was off.
Oh, DC. Right? Meadowlark is 46. And the best 46 I can think, that's a hard number.
That's a very football, baseball number.
That's an Andy. That's our pitcher. That's Andy Pettit was 46.
There it is.
The Andy Pettit edition next week.
An hour on Andy Pettit.
That's right. All right. I am Howard Bryant for Amin El Hassan and Kate Fagan. We will bid you adieu. See you later.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text THIN to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text THIN to 200-300. That's THIN to 200-300. THIN to 200-300.